we're back with Colleen Kettenhofen, and she is an international workplace employee and management expert. We're talking about bosses' pet peeves and problems that can arise in the workplace, that sort of thing. So, Colleen, we just started to delve into the world of some of these pet peeves, and we were talking about how sometimes you know, you feel like you're running a daycare center, and it's funny that you mentioned that you know, people having some educational background and feeling like, you know, a lot of their early childhood education experiences come into effect. And actually, prior to being an attorney, I was a teacher, and so I took a lot of early childhood development, early childhood education classes, and I think that has helped me in the workplace as far as, you know, how to sort of effectively manage a group or deal with people, or, you know, and I serve on a lot of different boards and board of directors of different organizations. And sometimes you have to, you know, you sort of have to, you know, it's like herding cats, you know, you have to wrangle a lot of different personalities and everything. And it can be difficult, but, you know, what are some strategies that you employ with your clients?
Well, one thing that I always say is you have to address it at the onset, because what happens is if the manager doesn't deal with this issue head on and privately with the employee, certainly if you're going to do a verbal warning or a written warning, you want to bring somebody in from HR, as you know, human resources department, or consult with an employment attorney. One of the big reasons why managers have to deal with it early on is because where there's no negative consequences, there's no incentive to change.
Right.
And, you know, being a parent, it's the same thing. And so sometimes with government employees or union employees, managers will say to me, it is a little bit harder. There's more steps they have to take.
Well, it really is.
A lot more documentation.
And I don't mean to interrupt you here, but, you know, my mother, she worked for the state government, state of Maryland, for a long time, and she ran a large branch of a health department. And, you know, employees periodically, it didn't matter how bad they were. I mean, in any normal circumstance, if you were in a private company, that person would have been out on their butts. But here in the state, I mean, it was not just months, but years of documentation before it could ever rise to the level of termination. And it's no wonder the government's going broke when you have these horrible employees that can work for you forever and ever with, you know, without getting fired. But I mean, it's a horrible situation. And I mean, it would create a very toxic workplace environment. It didn't matter how much of a cancer this person was to the rest of the department, it didn't matter, and there was only so much she could do. And she would come to me and say, well, I was finally able to fire, you know, Jane Doe. And I'm like, you've only been working at it for 4 years, you know.
Yes.
I mean, for God's sakes. But it is, and it's a whole complete different level. And you know, like I said, we deal with a lot of governments and a lot of municipalities, and we help them, you know, through those steps and make sure they have everything properly documented. But it's worth your life to do it, that's for sure.
And typically what I hear when I have those bosses in my programs is they'll say it takes about 5 years of documentation. When I did some training for a university, because I've trained schools and colleges, and with this one university, I had a dean who privately confided in me and said that with one of his employees, he knew it was going to take about a year and a half, but that this person had to be terminated because of, as you know, the effect it has on everybody else. Like you said, they become like a cancer that spreads.
Yep.
And then it's the effect that they have on the morale of the other employees. And of course, you can't terminate one employee for certain behavior, but allow it with somebody else. And so that's why for some of these managers and supervisors, they have such a hard time, because they didn't apply for the job of babysitter, and that's now what they have to do. But the other thing that I tell them, research points to the fact that after a while, if an employee is allowed to get away with that behavior, not only do sometimes superstars quit in disgust because they can no longer work with that person, but it becomes a negative reflection on the boss, because people start to wonder, why is he or she
not doing anything about it.
Right. So I say, don't let the inmates run the insane asylum.
Right, exactly. And here's the problem I see with that from a larger sense is in a normal corporation that would have been nipped in the bud. But in a government job, then it goes on and on and on. And the reason is, you know, in a regular corporation, in a private business, it would have had a profound impact on the bottom line, on the money coming into the business and that sort of thing. But in a government job, you know, they're going to get level funding, if not more funding, for the next year, no matter how good or bad of a job that particular department or that branch of the government is doing. And I mean, it's just the inherent problem with, you know, within the government, within government jobs.
And you know, Chad, you had mentioned negativity. I conducted research for my book, as I mentioned, with hundreds of managers and supervisors to find out what are their biggest frustrations. If I had a group of employees sitting right here, you know, what would you tell them are your biggest frustrations? And I would have them break into groups. They would pick a recorder to write down what their top 10 biggest pet peeves were.
Okay.
And then also the top 10 things that most employees don't know or need to do to keep their bosses happy.
Right.
So I would have them write these things down. Then each group would pick someone to speak from their group. And then when they would stand and speak, I would write these down on an easel on paper. And I would come back to my office and I would tabulate the results day in and day out for weeks and months. And when you mention negativity, that is the second biggest frustration of bosses. And it doesn't matter if they're a manager, supervisor, a team lead who doesn't have the direct authority, the executives, the CEOs that I interviewed, like the former CEO for United Healthcare, the senior VP for corporate marketing with FedEx. But all of these people said the chronic complainer, negativity, subversiveness was their second biggest pet peeve. And sense of entitlement, I'm starting to hear that one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third biggest pet peeve, I think this goes along with the negative person, and that is drama. High drama. The gossip or someone who talks about their personal life all day, every day. Just overall the antagonists.
I
call them the pot stirrers, those people who just have a desire for dissension. You know, they're like I call them the water cooler instigators. And, you know, it goes both ways because you had talked about, you know, way in your past.
Right.
Not so great bosses, and I've had that too. So I always say to them, you know, you have to set the example and don't make it do as I say, not as I do.
Right.
Don't practice blatant favoritism. Don't micromanage.
Right.
You know, people will look to see if you're practicing what you preach.
And part of that is sort of, you know, don't just dress and act for the job that you have. Do it for the job that you want. So, you know, if your goal within a company is to move up the ladder, you know, don't come in every day dressing like you're, you know, and acting like you're, you know, in the bottom tier. And as you're saying, you know, part and parcel with that is, you know, the workplace gossip and all of that. It also acts like a cancer within a company. And you know, I know this sometimes when I go up to my I go up to my Baltimore office, which is a much bigger office. We have, you know, 60 attorneys up there and a whole bunch of support staff and everything. When I go up there, you know, it's usually once a month or that sort of thing. That, you know, I get a lot of people stopping in my office and saying, you know, asking me, you know, about this and that and the other. And it's wonderful and it's good to see them, but I hardly get any work done when I'm up there because it's all like just, oh, let's all catch up and that sort of thing. And it's impossible to get any work done. And I get, you know, much more work done in my, you know, with my smaller office, you know, my branch office here, you know, on the shore. But, you know, to that end, what do you do? I mean, how do you help clients of yours and bosses try and put the kibosh on that sort of workplace environment with a lot of the sniping and the name calling and the backbiting and ankle biting and that sort of thing?
Well, one thing I say is, you know, as I mentioned earlier, is the morale. You got to take care of it because otherwise now you're putting out all these other fires.
Sure.
The other thing is you don't want the other employees to now go to HR or call up an attorney such as yourself saying, you know, in my company they've created a hostile, threatening
environment.
Because, you know, I have to work with a difficult coworker and I'm getting to where I don't want to come to work anymore. And it's true. I have had people come up to me when I do corporate training and they've said, Colleen, I'm dealing with someone who is so difficult. I'm getting to where I don't want to come to work anymore, but my boss is non-confrontational and just says, ignore it. Or handle it. So you could have people who either quit or they call up an attorney saying that because of this difficult coworker, they're working in a very hostile, threatening environment.
Right.
I mentioned earlier you can have superstars who quit in disgust. Although what I'm really seeing too, Chad, is a lot of people are staying where they're at even if they're miserable.
Right. And I want to get into some of that in our next segment, Colleen. I don't mean to cut you short, but you're exactly right. You know, there's so many people that, you know, even if they're miserable in their job right now, they can't go anywhere because there's no jobs out there. So, you know, it's the nature of the economy. But we'll get into some of that when we're back here on Shore Law with Chad Malkus.